The Tomboy Brunch. I'm a tomboy. I'm a tomboy. The Tomboy Brunch. I'm a tomboy.
Because ladies love sports too.
I'm a tomboy. The Tomboy Brunch.
Because ladies love sports too.
No one brings you sports and entertainment talk over mimosas like marketing guru Katrina Chambers. Tune in to a new episode of Tomboy Brunch every Saturday at 10 a.m. on Blog Talk Radio. Tomboy Brunch is your trusted source of sports, entertainment, and lifestyle information for women. Packed with fun and exciting ways for using your love of sports to empower women in every aspect of life. From fashion, pop, culture, music, health and wellness, cooking to politics, and more, the Tomboy Brunch covers it all. Think of it as SportsCenter meets The View. For more information, check out Tomboy Brunch at tomboy.com. That's T-O-M-B-O-I.com.
Hey, everybody. What's up, and welcome to the Tomboy Brunch. I am your hostess with the mimosas, Katrina Chambers, and we are back and blessed to see another weekend. Happy Saturday to all of you. Let me get right into this. I am super, super excited about today's show. This week when I was trying to think of a subject to talk about, the last couple of weeks have been kind of heavy with what's been going on in the news politically, socially. Things are real crazy right now with the election, mass shootings, death and taxes are all around us. But anyway, I, for some reason, just started looking at, since February 6th, Super Bowl Saturday, February 6th, the show debuted. We're literally, today is at the halfway mark of the first year, 26 weeks in. And why this first year is significant to me is because, I mean, this is the debut year. This is the year I want to kick down the door. And at the end of this year, the Super Bowl, the Houston Texans are hosting this year's Super Bowl here in Houston, Texas, which is where I reside, for those that don't know. But we are going to do a live Super Bowl brunch at the Houston Texans Grill on the Saturday before Super Bowl. I believe that's February 4th. But we'll get into more details with that as we go along in the next few months. But I will say this, if you have not signed up and following us on social media at The Tomboy Brunch, that's The T-O-M-B-O-I Brunch. And we know it's I and not Y, because the I is for us. It's all about us, women who love sports. Sports, entertainment, and mimosas. That's what the Tomboy Brunch is all about. It. Or you can go to tomboy.com and sign up there. Just make sure you are part of our network, and because you guys are going to get status. I'm taking care of my loyal listeners. So anyway, I say all that to say that this show today, this episode is dedicated to all my listeners. I never expected, but so soon, so quick for people to respond like this. And it just lets me know that this is needed. I wanted something like this to listen to see, and apparently you do too, and I appreciate that. So we're going to talk about these first 6 months, these first 26 episodes, and just the best of different moments that really has impacted me. And I thought about it. So the first one coming up is my very, very first episode, which was Super Bowl Saturday earlier this year. And my guest was Jemele Hill from ESPN's His and Hers. Her and I have been friends for several years now, but this podcasting, the interviewing thing, hosting thing is all new to me. But and I was really, really nervous. But Jemele, she's a pro at this. She's a pro at this. It was a great way to kick it off. And let's check out a little brief clip from that day.
Everybody's focusing on Cam Newton as the black quarterback, a.k.a. Thug, a.k.a. Versace Pants, you know, and Peyton Manning, all of those things, you know, Peyton, he may retire. Is that why we focus on something? But you always seem to find a twist or something and kind of to, I guess, take us out of that norm. I really enjoy watching you on His and Hers because sometimes you give your co-host, Michael, the business.
When you've been friends as long as we have, like, we reserve that right to give each other the business. But I knew last week when Cam Newton pulled the pin out the racial grenade and said that some people don't like him because he's an African-American quarterback and that scares some people. I was like, yep, there it is. Every media person at the Super Bowl now has their story. And while certainly I know I, for one, I'd be hypocritical to criticize him for opening a discussion on race because I do it all the time and I think it's necessary in order for us to make any kind of racial progress. There was a part of me that was concerned because, you know, Cam, for as much as he's been in the spotlight, the Super Bowl is a much different type of spotlight. You know, it's the most, usually the most highly watched television event of the year, more than likely, right. Top three at the worst. And so if you open that door, then you're not going to be able to control how the message is delivered from there. So you're going to be asked about it. And he started to get irritated throughout the week with people continually harped on that line of questioning. But, you know, he opened the door. And while I don't agree with how some of the questions were phrased, and I don't blame him for feeling a little bit annoyed, it was nevertheless going to be the dominant storyline of the week where, you know, Cam and race and black quarterbacks, even though Russell Wilson, we forget he's been in the Super Bowl twice in the last 3 years, and he's black. So it's not like Cam is the first one, but certainly between that and just this momentum building around this narrative that Cam is polarizing, which I'm not sure. I think to some people he is, but I still feel like the majority of people really enjoy him. So between that and Peyton Manning retiring, it was just like catnip for journalists. And so, unfortunately, the only thing we've heard, those have been the two most dominant storylines. And even with Peyton Manning, it got some extra legs because of the report by our own Adam Schefter talking about the Rams possibly being interested in signing him next year or adding him next year, regardless of the outcome of the Super Bowl. And if, of course, assuming that he wants to play another season beyond the Super Bowl.
Mm. So the thing is, does that make Cam, quote unquote, a special black quarterback? Or just to make him a special quarterback. Because, you know, special can have two different meanings. You know, sometimes he's special.
I think with Cam, it's just his style, the style of play. While we certainly, he's not the first mobile quarterback, not the first mobile black quarterback, but I think he brings a level of power and athleticism that we haven't seen from any quarterback, black or white, because he... Ken Stabler was a running quarterback, you know, Johnny Unitas. So there have certainly been some players that were not black that were also mobile and made plays with their feet. I think it's a style.
So what is it about him?
Well, I think what it is his style is very, I've said this about Cam, he's very unapologetic about it. And there have been instances with quarterbacks, especially African-Americans. I think we saw this to some degree with RG3, where I think they got, because there was so much criticism and so much conversation around whether or not a mobile quarterback could actually win, the Super Bowl and win significant things and do it over a long period of time, that they started to alter their style. And it felt like, to me, they were playing, trying to appease the people who were criticizing them as opposed to just playing within the constraints of what they could do and using their abilities. We saw this with Colin Kaepernick. I mean, he looks so confused out there now when just a couple years ago, him making plays with his feet got up to the Super Bowl. Like, I think either the media or fans or other critics, they make it seem like it's a bad thing if you do that. Cam doesn't play that way. And he plays with a level of enthusiasm and confidence. And some would say arrogance or cockiness. I mean, I guess it just depends on how you do those things.
Yeah, so I don't know if you can tell. I'm a lot more relaxed now. I don't know if it's because I'm drinking mimosas every Saturday or because I'm getting better at this. But anyway, I was super nervous. But Another memorable moment for me is interviewing moms. You know, part of the platform that, well, why I wanted to use this platform was to report from a different perspective of the athlete, i.e. his mom, his sister, or, you know, best friend. And some of two of my most memorable episodes, were really three, with moms have been Miss Lucille O'Neal, mother of NBA Hall of Famer Shaquille O'Neal, and Miss Wilma McNabb, mother of Donovan McNabb, NFL fame. And I always wanted to know how Miss McNabb got into the Campbell's soup commercials. Everybody remembers the Campbell's Chunky Soup commercials that Miss McNabb did. Check out how she got there.
How did you become a spokesman for Campbell's Soup? Those commercials were cool as hell.
It's funny because they had already had, in the beginning, they were doing Campbell's Soup with the NFL, partnering with the NFL. And they had commercials, but they were actresses. Like, I remember Terrell mm-hmm. Davis's, he was a Campbell Soup, he was, and you thought that lady was his mother, but it was not. So I used to tell Donovan, he had a contract agent and he had a talent agent, his marketing agent. And so I said, why don't they, you know, they should use the real moms. He said, they said they only have 2 days to do it and blah, 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 so they need an experienced person. So the first year, guess what, that Donovan was called to do the commercial, they used an actress with him.
Right.
Really. So we got a chance. He took us with, they did it in L.A., and we went, and I watched her, and I kept saying, I don't understand why you don't use real moms. I don't understand, you know, being one of them. So that next year, he got called to do it again. And so his agent called me, and he said, are you sitting down? And I said, yeah, I'm sitting down. What's up? He said, guess what? They're going to use the real moms. And you're going to be in the commercial. Yes!
Yes!
His second year. And we did those commercials for 6 years straight. We were the longest running Campbell Soup duo kind of commercial time for 6 years.
Oh, wow, that is cool. So then that shot you into the celebrity spotlight. I remember meeting you through Eddie's Health and Wellness Challenge. You're like, that's the Campbell's Soup Mom.
I mean,
used to run out on that field. They were that was good. That was good. It was for 6 years?
6 years. 6 years, the longest running duo, Donovan and I. And my husband even got to be in one. And people say, well, he didn't see that one. But, yeah, he got one. He got to say a line in one. So that was fun. So people remember
me. Did you get some free soup?
Campbell Soup. Yes. Yes.
I gave you free soup.
Yes. Campbell Soup has been very, very good to us. We love Campbell Soup and the directors and everybody that worked there. And they helped us on the foundation side, the charity side, because Donovan had the Donovan McNabb Foundation. And so we would also feed many people or get cans of soup, anything that they needed, Thanksgiving, during Thanksgiving time and whatever. And I always had soup in our cupboard.
Now, wasn't that cool? I love Miss McNabb. She and I go way, way back, and hearing those stories was great. So I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. But now, next, one of my most popular episodes was sex and relationships. I had Tammy, or you guys know her as Taj from SWV, Kim Whitley, and Dr. Rachel from the Doctors TV show. And we talked about sex and relationships. And this is the show, this is the episode where the term reality radio came to be, because both Dr. Rachel, Taj, and Kim, and myself all spoke freely. I mean, Doc broke it down. Kim Whitley was on set of her sitcom and having lunch at the same time, and it was hilarious. And if you haven't listened to it, after you listen to today's show, go back, download sex and relationships. It will make you laugh. It will bring a smile to your face. Check this out. Reality Radio.
Help me welcome the lovely Dr. Rachel. How you doing, Dr. Rachel?
Good morning, ladies. I love that. You're like, I love sex. Be loud and proud about it.
I actually really, really do.
I'm on the line.
I do too.
That's the truth.
I love sex.
That's good.
I can't lie.
Hello there. So happy to be on your show.
And you know what, Dr. Let me put this disclaimer in before we really get into this interview, especially with Taj and I on the phone together. The disclaimer that I always tell my guests is be ready to hold your own because I will cut you off because I have so many questions. I'm so excited.
Yes, she will.
Well, you know, we're going to let it do what it do. You know, you guys got to let me know if we can be rated R on the show, if we have to be PG-13, you know.
Honey, get it in.
No.
Get
okay.
It in. Get it in. This is Dr. Rachel Ross, the R, and the R. So absolutely,
yes.
That's what you're here for.
Okay,
I want to talk about your books and, like I said, I have some questions. We're going to talk about bedroom candy. You know, let's start there. How did you get hooked up with candy birds and the bedroom candy brain?
Oh, let me see. Let me think about that. You know, Candy and I met a few years back. I don't remember what we were doing when we met, but we've always kept in touch. And she had a convention coming up for her bedroom candy line, and she asked me to come and kind of speak to the ladies. And since that time, I've spoken to the distributors, and what I've done, which I was really proud of, is, you know, the bedroom candy is like the forefront. I mean, you guys are like miniature sexologists. So what I've done is try to give and encourage the women to take on that role specifically so that they're actually helping people with their sex problems instead of just providing, you know, unique items. Because there's so many, you know, sex is one of those things that's so taboo. Most people don't know to go talk to their doctor. Their doctor may not even know what to tell them. You know, so there's a lot of things that you guys can do to just kind of help the average couple or the average single with their sex lives that, you know, people like myself may never meet these people. So I really love what you guys do, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
Right, because that's one of the questions that one of my consultants, Shantae Jackson, had asked was the issue of women thinking toys, these, you know, vibrators, et cetera, would make them not want a man. And a lot of them don't use them because they say they want to use the real thing. Oh, no, I don't use toys. I'll wait for the real thing.
I told you guys that was funny. I mean, the mimosas, shrimp and grits, and comedy, and Dr. Rachel, and when Taj and I get together, we always talk about everything under the sun, no filter, and that's how Reality Radio of the Tomboy Brunch came to be. But next, also, I did two shows on a big loss to all of us as a country, as the world, international figures passed away within this last 6 months. The first being Prince. I'm a huge, huge Prince fan, as many of you are. And he passed away on April 21st, 2016. And I actually just went live, you know, that evening and just had people call in and share a memory, a moment. You know, my timeline on social media was literally crying because of Prince's death. It was unexpected. And, you know, we just talked to each other. The Tomboy Brunch is a family. My listeners came together. The phones were ringing off the hook and people just shared. Here's a taste of what the callers had to say about the passing of Prince.
I've been a Prince fan forever. Back to albums like Dirty Mind that I shouldn't have been listening to because I was young. But once you got Prince in your spirit, there is no way you could change your outlook about him. He is just a musical genius. And today, the world should be sad.
Yeah.
It's a sad
day. I loved Prince when I was a young girl. My older brother used to make me sit and watch him with a broom handle pretending to be Prince. and singing those songs. I want to be your lover with his hair flowing on the, you know, feathered back really beautifully. And I just remember my brother loving him. I learned to love him and because of my brother. Well, throughout college, seeing my friend Norvetta love him, and I just loved him because of my older brother, I guess you'd say. But when I had an opportunity in 2007 to get an opportunity to go to his show, I told my husband, we don't have that much money, but I'm going to be VIP.
I know, that's
so
right.
Well, when I was sitting at the show, we went through a tunnel that we did this whole amazing setup. They fed us and they gave us a CD. It was a whole setup. It was just amazing. And so I told my husband, I said, look who's sitting behind us. Our tickets were so good. He said, who's sitting behind us? I said, Erykah Badu. So we bought tickets and we were sitting in front of Erykah Badu. He called her out on stage and it was the most amazing show. Like, oh, it was incredible. Like, you felt him. I don't care where you were in that audience, you felt him up on you. He was so magnificent. The way he, you know, raised the stage and went from outfit to change, and it was a spiritual moment. It wasn't just you, it was spiritual. You felt it, like, all in your bones. Like, I don't even know how to describe it, but
I want to give homage to Prince. The one and only.
Yes. Tell us.
You know,
what's happening?
You know, I remember my brother was an avid album collector, so he always played music. I remember when he brought home the first Prince album, and you saw this man, this beautiful man. He was so beautiful, like a woman with facial hair, and had these eyes and this beautiful hair. And I'm just like, wow, you know, who is this? You know, put his music on, and it was a little risque. You know, I didn't really know what it meant at that time until I got older. But he always stepped outside of the box. I mean, he was always somebody that kept us on edge, and he wrote music, and the way he played that guitar and the way he just danced and jumped around on stage on those heels, better than some women. It's just, he's just an iconic figure that will surely be missed. I'm so glad that we have this music that is going to be left behind for us to treasure forever. And it's shocking to hear, and we know death is imminent, but it's always just heart-wrenching when you hear of death with someone who impacted a nation. So rest in peace. We're going to miss you. You know, we hope that your death is not in vain, because everybody already, how did he die? It's not about how he died, but how he lived.
Yeah, so Prince caught us all off guard. It was just a sad passing, but Prince and his music will forever live on, literally. He has enough songs in his vault that will outlive us. But sadly, also a couple of months later, we lost another great icon, another great legend in Muhammad Ali. And literally a week after his passing in June, I interviewed the Grandy twins. The Grandy twins, Danny and Stephen Grandy, are the seven-year-old twin boxing sensation. Although earlier this week, they just turned eight. They just turned 8 years old, and now they are old enough to compete. And they will be having their first competition. I'm so excited for them. They will be having their first competition coming up soon. But before I tell you about their first boxing match, let's listen in to their dad, Daniel, telling you about how hard these 2 7-year-olds, now eight, work. They've earned it. I can't wait to see them in the ring. Take a listen.
Dad, how did you get your young son started in boxing, and then at the age of seven, be so skilled at it?
I mean, actually, for me, it was an easy decision. I kind of, myself, grew up in the gym, pretty much saved my life from the streets, and, you know, just trying to get them to learn. You know, boxing is a tool we use to teach hard work, and hard work is a tool they're going to use for everything they do in life. So, like I said, it was just an easy decision, and they became naturals at it at an early age. At two, they were already throwing combination punches. So
at
just
two?
At two.
Wow. And so how, and were you a boxer?
Yeah, I fought a little bit of amateur. I got a couple uncles that fought, cousins. It's like a family sport.
Okay. Okay. So how did you get them started in training at 2 years old? Like, were you literally taking them to the gym, or were you just in your living room?
I would actually take them to the gym and just, like, let them experience it. Like, I have a nephew. I do the same thing with them. He's two. Take them around the gym, sit them in front of the ring, and they pretty much picked up on their own. I actually never put gloves on my sons. I bought a pair of gloves and set them on the floor, and they gravitated to them. They put them on themselves.
Oh,
like,
wow.
You know, take one of those situations where proud daddy moment.
I bet. So, Stephen and Danny, tell me how you guys like boxing. What is it about boxing that you guys like?
We like jump rope and the pull-up bar. I like about boxing, when you have to get in a ring and fight, it helps me. Like, when someone messes with me, or, like, trying to fight me, I either fight them back, just defending myself. And if I don't defend myself, I'm going to get beat up.
Oh, wow. That is great. If you don't defend yourself, you will get beat up. So now you can defend yourself.
Yeah, he definitely talked about it in the gym because we stress no fighting in school. He just,
right.
Defense first in the ring is basically what he's trying to explain.
Right. And so have they had any fights? Like, what's the minimum age that you can fight?
No, actually, they can't compete until 8 years old. And, like, I'm really not in a rush. I'm in no rush because I don't want the sport to burn my kids out. I've seen other kids start so early and get burnt out and quit when they're 16 when they're really good. So there's no rush.
Right.
And we just want to keep practicing to get better and better and better. And when I feel like they're completely ready, then, you know, we'll take the next step. But the actual age is 8.
Oh, wow. And so have you guys ran up the stairs like Rocky? I said, have you guys run up the stairs like Rocky did in the movie?
Yeah.
The art museum steps. You ran up the steps many a times.
Oh, wow.
We didn't get tired, not one day.
Huh?
Oh, wow.
Last time we were with our mom, we got in trouble because we were into the water fountain.
Well, you're supposed to do that. That's how you top it off. So tell me, so do you guys fight each other when you're practicing with each other? Are you just encouraging each other and, you know, saying, go, Danny, go, Steve? Or do you guys spar amongst yourselves, too?
We encourage each other. Because, like, he helps me and I help him.
Oh, wow. That's great. So August 26th, if any of you are listening in the Philadelphia area, August 26th, the Grandy Twins will be competing in their first match. And you can find the Grandy Twins online. Just Google the Grandy Twins boxing and tons of information will come up. And, of course, you can always go to tomboy.com. But good luck to the Grandy Twins, and they will definitely be back, and we will be hearing more from these two, without a doubt. There's no doubt in my mind. So moving on, and speaking of moving, one of my most moving shows, moved me anyway, that really moved me was the show titled A Different POV. And POV meant to me a point of view and also prayer over violence. You know, lately here, the mass shooting, police brutality, police, I can't even articulate it well, but police getting shot, you know, innocent people were just losing lives. Bombs, you know, here, stateside and overseas. It's really getting out of hand. But I did this show. I had the wife of a police officer. I had mothers raising black men, and I had a good friend of mine. I used to teach, and I used to teach with her, Cindy Gentry, who is the white mother of her adopted black son. And some of the things she said were so profound that if I didn't know her race, she sounded like a black woman
fearful for her black son. She didn't see color. Fear, the fear was the same from the black mother and from Cindy. So, again, one of my most moving episodes. Take a listen.
But no, I haven't had any issues in this town. My friends have all been great. And just, they just really love Christian. Everybody loves Christian around here. But I say that, but I'm also an avid believer in traveling. And I don't want him to stay in this small town. And I want him to go out and see the world. So that scares me. You know, I'm teaching him very young. We're going to we travel a lot and we're going to continue to do so. And so I know that he's not always going to be sheltered in this little town.
Right.
I don't want him to be sheltered. So I'm fearful for when he does leave Gallatin. You know, what else is out there? A Louisiana.
So what types of things are you having to talk with him about race at all, or have you had to?
Not much, other than he has noticed. You know, we were going to a Christmas party with all of my high school friends and their children, and it's a large group now, like 50 people, and we were in the driveway, and he said, I wish my skin was white. A large group now, like 50 people. And we were in, it just took my breath away and made me sick. And I said, why, you know, and I knew why, but I wanted him to express it in his 6-5-year-old way. And cause he's the only one there. And I just told him, I said, well, buddy, but in his 6-5-year-old skin, you wouldn't be my son because God intended for you and I to be together. And you are who I wanted. And I love your skin. Your skin is what I wanted. That's what I chose. So, you know, we've had those conversations about how much I love
him. Did that make him feel better?
It did.
Yeah, because I love the fact that you named him Christian.
Yes, and yeah, Enom is his middle name, and it says gift from God. Enom in Africa means gift from God, so he is my gift from God, and, you know, I don't do everything, obviously perfect, no mother does, but I do try to, he has several babysitters, and I usually try to get my babysitters, our students that I teach, and I tend to go toward my black students. Because I'm trying my best to give him as much exposure to his culture and his skin color that I can, because I can't offer that as a me by myself.
Right.
But
all you can do, so, I mean, and that's not all, but loving him is, you know, but you,
right.
Yeah, they're, you know, and it reminded me of like Jesse Williams' speech that he made on the BET Awards. One of the first things that he did was point to his parents to show his white mother and his black father. Whew, that was a deep and moving episode for me, but we got through it. But it was also inspiring, and it showed me that, you know, we're changing lives. We're affecting lives, which is the goal, We don't want to just get together every week and just talk about stuff and not try to infect change and inspire and move people to do something. And also during that time, and only about less than 3 months in, the Tomboy Brunch was listed as one of the top 10 black women hosted podcasts that you should be listening to. And this was a big oh-ho moment for me, because prior to then, you know, I just assumed only my family and friends were listening. But apparently more people are listening and more people are listening and more people are joining this movement. And this is what it's going to take for us to get a bigger platform and for us and everybody else to realize that we're a huge market, and ladies love sports too, and entertainment, and mimosas. Anywho, but another, let's get to some more happier moments. And one of the happiest are when my family gets involved. And two big shows where that happened most recently, my goddaughter Tahira, who just turned 20, and she is this really dope feminist activist. You know, she has a famous father, but that she has transitioned into her own woman, and it has been a pleasure to see it. And I can't wait to see where she's going. But also, my godson, my nephew, Eric George, who is the son of Taj and Eddie George, he interviewed his dad about his role as Billy Flynn in Chicago on Broadway. And it was just really, I kind of just sat back and listened to the two of them and their exchange. It was really special. Cool. Check out Eric and his interview today.
Well, now we're back. Well, do you want to introduce today's guest or do you want me to?
I'll do it.
Okay. Take it away.
Ladies and gentlemen, help me introduce my dad, Eddie George.
And the crowd goes wild.
And that's goodness, and that's how you introduce your dad, Eric. You introduced me as the chief, as the running back extraordinaire. You can't include those titles. Me beating you at football every chance I get.
Sorry.
Oh. Don't be sorry, babe.
Congratulations on your new convoy venture. I think it's awesome.
Thank you, thank you, and thank you for joining us for sports, entertainment, and mimosas. I myself are having a pineapple mimosa, and Eric has his glass of OJ, as you know. Do you have a favorite mimosa?
Me, personally, I like regular mimosas. I don't have one right now because I'm about to go to work in a little bit, but my thing is I like on Sundays, I like to get a mimosa and back that up with the Baileys and coffee and spend my time. Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, we know you're busy and we know this is a busy weekend for you, so we're not going to take up a lot of your time, but Eric and I have been getting ready for this interview for a while, and personally, there are just so many facets of you that I've seen that others haven't. But this show, this entire episode is dedicated to you only as the Renaissance Man. And we want to take a little bit of time to just talk about the different facets of you that the public has seen. And we wanted to start off with you as the athlete. Eric, why don't you start with talking about your dad as the athlete?
Okay. How was it to be drafted by the Houston Oilers?
And drafted by Houston was a dream come true. I just remember being your age, Eric, and, you know, being in the backyard, playing football by myself, playing football on air, played football with, like, breads high from the bag. And every time I got a chance to play football, I did. But with my fingers, with my toys, whatever. And I always wanted to make it flow collegiately and professionally. So when I got drafted, it was another step in terms of me going to the next level and me accomplishing my dreams. And I'll never forget when I called my name to get drafted, I always had mixed emotions because, one, I was excited, but, two, I knew there was work that needed to be done. I felt like I still needed to prove myself on that level. And immediately when they called my name, I said, okay, I want to be Rookie of the Year. I want to win the MVP. I want to win the Super Bowl championship. And I remember that vividly. And, you know, I enjoyed the moment, but I was more focused on what I had to do work-wise.
Good question, too, E. Good question.
Thank you.
Let me ask you a question, too. How do you feel, or in your career, how do you feel about your female sports fans? Because, you know, diehard, not just the fans that, oh, number 27 is cute, but like your mom, your wife, the women in your life. I know the women in your life are surrounded by you, and they're tomboys. They're the definition of tomboys, with the females who love men's professional sports and that are raising these athletes. But how do you feel about your female fans as a professional athlete?
You know, I think it's good to have a female perspective. You know, my wife now, she's really become a true fan of football and understands the nuances of the game, the philosophy of the game, because she's been around me for so many years. You watch so many games, you start to pick up on it. So it's no longer, you know, well, this athlete looks cute in this uniform. I mean, you still got some of that.
Right.
But you truly invested in teams, the games, the players, the strategy of the game. And the same holds true with my mom. And I think nowadays, you know, what we're seeing is an influx of female fans and women in the workplace finding positions in sports, like newscasters from ESPN and even in the NFL and NBA, they're seeing them getting more coaching opportunities. I think that is incredible to see the diversity really going well beyond color, but starting to transcend over into you know, male and females, certain females getting opportunities to show their worth in executive positions.
I told you. Eric George, be on the lookout. When he's not shy, he is the man. And also, if you're in the Houston area, Eric will be in Houston next weekend competing at the Junior Olympics throwing the discus. So he will be in Houston throwing the discus. Can't wait. So now for my final best of moment. And that was when I interviewed Eric Haywood, who is a screenwriter and a writer in general and director, and has directed and written for Empire. For those of you that know me, know I love me some Empire. And what makes it special is Eric was also my first boss when I graduated college and moved to Atlanta. I worked under him at his production company. As a production assistant doing music videos, Outkast, Goody Mob, Too Short. It was so much fun. Those were the days. But yeah, so to see him continue his writing, move out to Hollywood and become the writer that he has, he's written for Soul Food, The Practice, and now Empire. He has his own independent films out. And it was just really surreal. But also in that same episode was the Brat, who was talking about her feature in that season and talking to her again. That's when I became a fan for a moment, because I've always been a fan of the Brat, but it was a great interview with her. She was so candid about her time in jail, about her music, about being on set of Empire, about her relationship with Mariah, everything. So that was definitely one of my favorite episode. So that's just the tip of the iceberg, you guys. So that by far has been one of my favorite episodes. So if you haven't listened to it, immediately after the show, listen to that episode, Empire. It was a great episode, and the Brat and Eric rocked it. They made it so easy
no
for
longer and get right into it. Everybody, please raise your glasses and help me welcome the Brat.
Raise them up, raise them up.
The crowd goes wild.
Hey.
Welcome to the brunch. Welcome to the
Tomboy
Brunch.
Thanks for having me.
Brett, how are you?
Oh, I'm blessed and highly favored.
Good, good. First of all, let me just get out my little groupie moment and tell you that I am a huge fan of the Brat. A huge fan of the Brat as a legendary female rapper. 1994, when Funkified came out, I mean, that was our, you know.
Yeah.
What you and Jermaine have done and all your remixes you've done, you kept it moving. They just don't do music like that anymore. And I appreciate it. I appreciate
thank you so much.
Now because I missed it.
Yeah.
Are you still doing music?
Of course, music is my passion. That is what I do in any spare time I get. I'd rather do music than go to sleep.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about. That's passion.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you're not getting much sleep lately, I've seen. Congratulations on your new spot on Dish Nation.
Thank you so much.
You're all
Thank
over
you.
The place now.
Yeah.
And Ricky.
Gotta stay on my grind.
You're doing it, too. You're doing it. And Ricky Smiley, things still going good over there?
Oh, everything is great over there. I'm so grateful that he gave me the opportunity to join the cast of the show.
And so how is the transition from going behind the mic as a rapper and now as a host, as a radio host? How does it feel? Was it hard?
No, the transition wasn't hard at all. I'm used to being on the mic in front of a crowd and just talking. And even when I do my shows, I engage the audience and talk and, you know, make them feel like they're getting to know me or that they get to leave with a piece of me. The transition was easy. You know, I'm just sitting still a lot, but it was easy. It's the same as being on the mic on stage.
Yeah, because I was going to say, on Dish Nation, I've been watching you, and you look like you're comfortable, like you're at home.
Yeah, I'm very comfortable.
You talk out a lot. You kind of bring people back. You definitely hold your own and don't bite your tongue.
Well, thank you so much. That's probably one of the reasons they hired me. It's easy because I just get to be myself, you know?
Yeah.
You're very good at being yourself, Brett, I must say.
How is it working with her, Sylvia?
It's actually really fun. It's really fun because Brett honestly makes me laugh every day, even when cameras aren't rolling or the mic isn't recording. And she's really easy to talk to when she's fun because she can talk about anything. And, you know, it's like you have a true interest when you talk to people and you give your undivided attention. And that's something that I appreciate because most entertainers or celebrity people really don't do that.
Thank you, Sylvia. Has your friendship with Jermaine Dupri and Mariah Carey evolved over the years? It seems like no matter which one of you are speaking, you always mention the other. It's clear that you guys have a bond that's outside of a professional friendship, but it's really personal.
Oh, most definitely. We all have an unbreakable bond. We've been to hell and back with each other, through it all with each other, and we just support each other no matter what. No matter what we're doing, no matter where we are, you know, on earth, we support each other and have love for each other.
That's good. That's wonderful. Well, you guys, we are going to take a short break, short ID break, but we will be right back with Sylvia, and the Brat is going to tell us how she ended up on Empire. We'll be right back. So there you have it, some of my favorite moments this far, halfway through the first year. And I keep emphasizing first year because, guys, you do not realize the super, Super Bowl brunch that the Tomboy Brunch is going to bring to Houston. And I hope that you can all be there Super Bowl Saturday. And if you want more information about it, make sure we can reach you. Make sure you have went to tomboy.com, or hit us up on the Tomboy Brunch on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, The Tomboy Brunch. And because when we start sending out the emails, you guys get priority. You guys get priority. I'm bringing my family with me. So enjoy the rest of your Saturday. Enjoy the rest of your brunch. And I will see you next week on the Tomboy Brunch. And thank you so much for bringing me this far. God bless.